WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
When filmmaker Philip Haas read A.S. Byatt's 1990 novella Morpho Eugenia, he knew immediately that it had cinematic possibilities. Set in Victorian England, it's the story of William Adamson, a naturalist who has spent many years doing research on the Amazon. On his return to England, one of his sponsors, Harold Alabaster, an amateur insect collector, invites him to live on his estate. Adamson is immediately entranced by Alabaster's daughter, Eugenia, whom he marries. But all is not what it seems in the Alabaster family. There are dark secrets beneath the outward civility. Haas's film of Byatt's novel is called Angels and Insects, and it's now out on video. Here's a scene from the beginning of Angels and Insects when Adamson, played by Mark Rylance, has his first naive encounter with Eugenia Alabaster, played by Patsy Kensit, at a ball.
My father was so sorry to hear you had lost so much in the terrible shipwreck. For your sake, and for his own, he was eager to add to his collection.
Well, I did manage to save one or two of the rarest, most beautiful butterflies. I suppose there's a certain pathos in saving a dead butterfly. But one in particular is such a rarity. I'll say no more now, but I believe your father will be glad to have it. And you too. But it's to be a surprise, really.
I hate people who tell me I am to have a surprise and will not tell me what it is.
You don't like suspense?
No. No, I don't. I am afraid of surprises.
I must remember never to surprise you then.
What interested you about the story?
I was very much attracted to the visual possibilities in the story. The idea of comparing a Victorian house to an ant colony, and certain other visual things in the film or in the story were very attractive. The idea of our hero, William Adamson, wooing his bride by creating a cloud of butterflies to encircle her in the conservatory seemed to me that if we could pull it off in a film, would be a magical moment. Also, it had a very compelling storyline, and the denouement at the end seemed to me totally shocking. I mean, when I read it, I was felt like I'd been hit in the stomach, and I wanted to reproduce that in film. So it was really a combination of it being a visually exciting piece, a very dramatic one, and one that made me think about the story for a long time after I read it. And what I try and do in a film is to at once engage an audience and then hopefully let them not forget it.
I want to ask you about a couple of scenes where we see the naturalist William Adamson. He has married Eugenia Alabaster, lives at the Alabaster Estate, and there are several scenes where we see him walking down the hall, and coming towards him are a couple of female servants, a couple of maids, and as they pass, they turn themselves and face the wall. I didn't know if this was a common custom at that time or whether this was something that you invented, but it makes for an interesting, powerful interchange as these people pass in these darkened hallways.
I got the idea because in researching the period, I read that a particularly nasty lord fired any servant who dared to cross his path. So I felt that the servants in this house would have been terrified that if they had any contact with the gentry, you know, their position might be threatened or they would be, you know, dismissed. So although William isn't quite of the gentry, they view him as, you know, he's now married to, you know, to Eugenia. So they just would not want to make eye contact with him. Similarly, since we are making this analogy between the worker ants and the servants, you can never really tell what the face of an ant looks like. So I didn't want you to be able to see the servants' faces, with the exception of the servant, you know, Amy, who becomes important in the story.
So, and in a sense, it's true. Their faces are kind of covered, and we see them. They're small, and they kind of flitter by.
Right. And in fact, in casting the servants, we cast all local people. I wanted them to be really of the place. And we were very specific in our advertisements of saying, looking for small, dark people to play this, you know, these parts in a film.
What's the challenge of working with insects, specifically in this film, butterflies, moths, ants? As a film director, who's in charge? The animals or you?
No, I would say the animals definitely were in charge. There's an old adage: never work on a film with children or animals. And you know, animals generally is referred to as sort of barnyard animals. I now have to extend that to never work with insects. It was extremely difficult. I mean, each species presented a different challenge. You know, from the butterflies to the moths to the ants. I mean, for example, with the ants, we have a number of scenes in which a colony of red slave-making ants attack a colony of your sort of normal black ants. Unfortunately, where we were shooting the film in Warwickshire in England, the red slave-making ants don't exist. So we actually had to transport a log from southern England full of a red slave-making colony up at the dead of night so that when they woke up in the morning, they wouldn't know they had moved. We had to position in the exact same position to the sun as they were in the south of England. And they quickly adapted to their new locale. But after a couple of days, a vicious woodpecker started attacking them. So they decamped. So we had to then try and gather up the ones that had decamped and then bring another log in. So that was just one challenge. With the butterflies, it became a question of how many butterflies would one have to release to create a cloud of butterflies. And then when we figured out that it would be in the thousands, to actually get, you know, 4,000 butterflies became an enormous task. We ended up renting them from the Stratford-upon-Avon butterfly farm.
How do you do that?
Well, you go and speak to the owner and say, look, we will rent them at 50 cents a butterfly and return them to you. And we found that the butterflies really flew well for only one launch. So it meant figuring out a system of transporting them the 45 miles from the butterfly farm to the estate, then releasing them, collecting them, and sending them back to Stratford so they could replenish themselves. And basically we had a whole kind of carpool system of always having, you know, several thousand butterflies at hand, and then recirculating them after they had rested and fed. With the moths, it just was very hard to get them to actually attack the actress. We finally sort of did it by a combination of positioning them, throwing them at her. But Patsy Kensit, who plays the actress at once sort of attracted to the butterflies and repelled by the moths, was a wonderful sport, particularly since she hated the moths. They're awful, the ones we use, these hawk moths. I mean, awful in the sense that they're rather menacing looking and sort of dropped on her unexpectedly and made terrible noises. So she didn't have a whole lot of acting that was necessary. I mean, she found it very repellent and showed that enormously and easily. And I think the scene, you know, worked splendidly because of that.
Yeah, and what we see are the moths really climbing up her dress, and she's terrified, of course. In the scene where the butterflies are launched as a sort of a great seduction, what were the specifics of launching those butterflies? What specifically did you have to do to get them to do what you wanted on film?
Well, one, it needed to look like they were encircling her and not just being dumped on her. So it was a question of positioning them with relationship to the camera and to Patsy. And we launched them with 10 people with butterfly nets out of camera sight, releasing them in the directions that we determined would give a feeling of them flying around her in a way that was natural and not looking like we're just shooting butterflies out of a cannon.
And that then created the kind of swirly
yes.
look that we see. I'm interested, too, in how you approach the scenes where people were having sex. And I assume there are many traps that a filmmaker can fall into in trying to put sex on the scene. Going into them or even conceiving them, what were your thoughts?
Well, firstly, I wanted to make it visually interesting. That is, not to feel like sexual scenes that one has seen before. I mean, generally, in a movie, you'll see, you know, a man and a woman in a shower, you know, right. And it looks like a sort of an ad for soap, you know, with a bit of sort of Playboy magazine thrown in. What we had going for us here is the sexuality was very much a part of the story, so the actors didn't feel exploited in any way, and you know, they all wanted it to feel true to the story, and although this is not a pornographic movie. You know, we wanted their response to feel like a response that, you know, a couple would have behind closed doors.
I noticed many of those scenes were filmed through a kind of gauzy curtain that tangs around Eugenia's bed.
Well, one of the things that we did in the—I think it's in one scene in particular that you get this sort of shot through the gauze effect, and it's on their wedding night. One, the gauze gave it a kind of soft, romantic feel, and then it was punctuated with shots inside the gauze, which were much more graphic and harsh. And I wanted to play on that, these two things of romance and softness coupled by, you know— sexual rigor. And one of the things that's surprising in the story is this virginal character played by Patsy Kensit. Eugenia seems to, you know, have an enormous appetite for sex, and that obviously becomes part of the story as the film progresses.
Her bedroom too looks like some kind of a lair. I mean, it's an interestingly...
Yes, it's a kind of spider's web, isn't it, really? You know, it's a film about entrapment, and the bedroom is a sort of metaphor for that. Also, you know, it's a film, you know, in which the sexuality is equally explicit with men and women. You know, you generally, you know, in films which are dealing with sex, you know, in a sophisticated... shall I say, artistic way. You know, the director has no problem with sort of revealing all of the woman, and the man is sort of, you know, viewed as a sort of just the, you know, upper torso. And in fact, you know, here, you know, everybody is shown with their trousers off, as it were.
Philip Haas's film Angels and Insects is now out on video. This is Fresh Air.